You're listening to Bottom Shelf Bitcoin. This is episode 38. And I know that you guys were waiting for that interview with Alex Hardy, and I promise it will be next week. This week is Randy Brito. I just figured it was a little more timely, and I wanted to get this interview out because of what's going on in Venezuela right now. So anyway, that other interview with Alex Hardy is coming next week. All right, theme music. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Bottom Shelf Bitcoin, the podcast that puts Bitcoin knowledge within everyone's reach. As always, I'm your host, Josh Humphrey, and today with me is Randy Brito. Randy was previously on, and we talked about a project that he works with, Bitcoin Venezuela, but today he's gonna come on and we're going to talk about Loka, which is some mesh networking efforts that they're doing down there as well. So Randy, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, I think, you know, we kind of went into your background in the last time you were on the show. So, we don't need to rehash all of that. People can go back. I'll link in the show notes to that episode if you guys want to hear Randy's background, but, can you kind of give us an update today? We're recording this on the, 24th. So, been seeing a few things coming out of what's going on in Venezuela, maybe yesterday and today. Can you kind of give us an on-the-ground update? Because it's always so hard to judge from what we see on Twitter and on the news.
Well, what has been happening in Venezuela is that in the January 10th, the term for Maduro, the previous term, has finished. So it is supposed to take power. He was supposed to take power again. But no one recognizes the last year May election, so he's currently not the legitimate president of the country. So he's currently in power, but no one recognizes him as the real president of Venezuela. The constitution, the current constitution, says that if that happens, the president of the National Assembly needs to take interim presidency until new elections take place. And this is what yesterday happened on the 23rd of January 2019, is that Juan Guaido proclaimed president as interim president for as a transition to take Venezuela into free elections.
Okay, and then, I don't know, I saw some clips of people, you know, a lot of people out in the streets. I don't know if they were celebrating or protesting, and then there were reports that soldiers were, I don't know, firing into the crowds or something.
Yesterday, there was a demonstration in support of whatever Guaido was going to say, and it was more like a celebration of the 23rd, because it is an important date in the history of Venezuela, and they took this specific date to make this proclamation of the interim president. So everyone went to the streets in support to him, so he could claim the presidency of the country as a transition. After that, and also the day before, and all started, and the forces of the government and also the very well-known militias that I have there, which are criminal bands that are in support of the current government and the regime. So they went to the streets as a way to show support to Guaido, and the forces ended up violently pushing them back into their houses. But these people are really sick of the situation right now in Venezuela, so they are pushing back. And so this is why there have been some already like people being killed by the militias, and some police, also the National Guards, are fighting to these people in the streets. So, but the thing is that most people in Venezuela are not armed. They don't have guns, so they basically are replying with rocks and sticks and everything they can find. But most of the forces do have heavy guns, and they are shooting back. They are literally killing some people, like 17 already in the last like 30 hours only. This is something that has been happening since the night of the 22nd.
Gotcha. Now, as I'm unfamiliar with the laws there, is it illegal for citizens to own guns in Venezuela, or is it just not common?
It is. It has a very strict law on gun ownership, and even the opposition a couple of years ago create a law to even restrict it more on regular people. So in comparison, what has just happened in Brazil with the Bolsonaro president have just ordered that anyone without any criminal record can have a gun for self-defense and to protect their property. This is completely different in Venezuela. This is very strict law in Venezuela for gun ownership. Most of the people don't have one. Only those that are capable of buying one, like in the black market. So you need to have not only the funds or the money to buy one, but also the idea of having it for self-defense. So most of the people used to believe in the public service of the police to protect them. Even if most of the police forces are corrupt and most of them kill innocent people, the people that still don't like guns in Venezuela. It's a very religious country, so people don't like violence. This is why they are not so violent when trying to fight the oppression of the regime itself. So this expecting like a civil war where you have a lot of civilians armed going against the forces of the Chavista regime, that is very unlikely to happen because most of the people don't have guns and they don't even want to use it. But despite that, yesterday there were some reports of people celebrating that criminals bands or criminal gangs of the slums in Caracas were going down to fight back the police. So they were publicly celebrating criminal armed, heavy armed gangs are somehow protecting the people against the regime forces.
Wow. So do you think this new interim president is going to be a good thing overall, or is it going to make much of a difference?
The thing is that the army is not recognizing the constitution order of this person taking power as an interim president. So if the army is not recognizing that right, which is basically in the current constitution, so they are calling it an attempt to make a coup d'etat to who they think is the legitimate president of Venezuela, who is Maduro. So what is most probably going to happen, and I think is what the opposition should do, is creating a council for transition, which is you create a separate representation of the will of the people through some kind of previous election, which was the National Assembly, against the current governing power, which is the Chavista regime. So you put both powers in some kind of talks to negotiate what is going to happen. This happened in Libya. So this is basically trying to agree on what is the best for Venezuela and the best for themselves, because most of the people right now running the country in Venezuela have their own interests. It's very profitable to be in power. This is what I think the army have stepped up and say that they want to see the opposition negotiating with the current government, for the current government to live peacefully to somewhere they are not going to be jailed. So I think the army step up saying this because that's the only way they can stay in power in the army. So it's like you change the executive government, but you still have all the power of the army on your hands because you were a tool for the peaceful transition.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And that's the, that's kind of what you're talking about, right? Everybody has their own self-interest to look after in some sense.
Yeah, I think it's them trying to stay in their import. It's very important that the current position they have. So they are somehow willing to let other take power of the executive or the presidency if they can stay in the power of the army, which is a very profitable place to stay, taking into account that most of the drug trafficking, gold mining, diamonds, and everything is currently run by military people. So it's like they are trying to keep the things as they are and change everything else.
Gotcha. Okay, well, let's transition now. Something I've seen you talking about recently is this LOCA.io, this mesh network that you guys are working on. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it is pronounced LOCA.
LOCA. Okay,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, because of the CH in Spanish is pronounced that way. So it's like LOCA is currently a joint effort between some people that we would like to make tools that help the adoption of cryptocurrency, specifically Bitcoin, in Venezuela or places like it, like the current Turkey and Iran and other places, maybe Spain in the near future. I hope it doesn't happen, but I would like to see the tools available for people to be able to communicate and transact freely, even if the current government don't let them and don't want them to do it. So it started like a year ago, and we started making research and suggesting fixes to the tools that we already use in places like Venezuela to make them more accessible and also make them better for the regular user to be able to start using cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin right away as a medium of exchange, even if it's not used as a store of value yet, or even if it's not used for anything else, but at least as a rail for payments, for free libre payments, where that cannot be censored and cannot be spied on. So this is evolved after some fixes, like the developing the and fixing improving the Bitcoin Bolivar API price, and making some research and help on Ethereum, the Bitcoin Electrum wallet, which used to have some issues in all funds. So like Venezuela right now has like 11.9 smartphones only, and half of them run older versions than the Android 5. So this was one of the things that we tried to fix, which is the Electrum wallet, which is a user control wallet, being capable of running on this old and cheap phones. And this evolved into what is actually needed in Venezuela right now to use Bitcoin. And we came up with the idea of making affordable do-it-yourself or repurposed devices to create a mesh network of devices that will let people to communicate with each other in a secure way, but also transact in Bitcoin transaction. Even if there is no internet, SMS, text messages, calls, or mobile 3G network. So even if someone is completely isolated in a city, which has happened in Venezuela in the past year for several weeks or months in some cities, which have been completely disconnected from the rest of the world because there is no electricity, internet, or phone, or even phone service. So you will still be able to transact and also chat with one of these devices, which are meant to be really cheap, or you can even build them yourself in your house, and you only will only need to flash them or install them as software, and they will be ultimately part of the mesh network of devices which connect to each other to transmit these messages or signal transactions.
Cool. Okay. So, and if correct me if I'm wrong, but I was thinking when I was looking at this stuff, there's a couple of different types of devices that serve different purposes. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. We currently are thinking about the like lowest end and cheapest device, which we call Turpial, which is currently based on chipset that will let us install the enough software in it that just as a plug and play device, you can have it running on a battery, for example, and if you have it on, it basically talk to others, Turpiales and other mesh network devices right away. So it's you can start using it just plugging it in the electricity or in a battery, and it will let you send messages through it completely off-grid without having it connected to internet or to mobile 3G or to anything else. You will be able to send messages through it until it start transmitting this message that is sent through the mesh network of devices through other peers until it reaches the receiver. And also, you will be able to send transactions, well, Bitcoin transactions through it until it reaches some kind of gateway, which is a mesh network device, which is both connected to the mesh and also to internet. So it receives a signal transaction and it's capable of pushing it to the Bitcoin network through the internet. So the transaction can get the Bitcoin confirmations and then reply back to the user inside the mesh that the transaction has been confirmed.
Okay, and so, and when we're talking about mesh network, just so if people are unfamiliar, we're talking about over radio frequencies. Now, are you limited in what frequencies you can use, or is it adjustable? Or
we are currently working on the frequency, which is like the one that you can publicly use, ISM. Yeah. I think it's the name. And the thing is that in that you can basically transmit anything that you want because it's used for education and emergencies and everything else. So it's like open. You can do anything there. So where the devices are currently talking to each other through radio using LoRa antennas, which basically lets you connect devices up to between 1 kilometer and up to four kilometers distance in the open. And for this, these devices are capable of connecting to each other and transmitting the transactions or messages through hops. So there's like jumping from one device to another until it reaches where the receiver is. So, but it's also, these devices are also capable of using more direct, like closer connection with more bandwidth, which is Wi-Fi, and even Bluetooth. So even so you could have the devices like close enough to use Wi-Fi between them. So the amount of information that you can transmit between them is bigger and doesn't need to be chopped in small packets. But if the person you are trying to reach is in another city, these devices are capable of sending them through radio using small packages. So you can even go like 20 miles, like not 20 miles, 20 kilometers distance. And with this big node that we call ARPIA, or ARPIA in Spanish, is that are capable of sending transaction between cities using radio antennas. Not only that, is that if you have a whole city with devices connected between them, creating a mesh, and they talk to each other to transmit messages securely and privately, but also to transmit Bitcoin transaction between them, you could have all these devices running you could have some of the devices, which are ARPIA, which are bigger, to run Bitcoin full nodes inside of them, which will let them also offer to the mesh, which is basically a network of devices, offer to the mesh the service of aligning network full node. So you can have all these users in the mesh, which currently rely on some ARPIA devices, which provide them with blockchain data. So they can tell if the transaction has been confirmed or not in the Bitcoin network. And they can, and these users, the end users, can use the Lightning Network payments to pay each other because they use the full node that is being offered to them through the big nodes. What happens if a whole city currently is paying each other with Bitcoin on-chain transaction? They are not capable of doing this if a whole city, for example, despite being inside the same mesh, gets disconnected from the internet because there is no gateway that connects them to the internet. The thing is that for Bitcoin to be able to use it as a medium of exchange securely, you still need to rely on network confirmations. So if the whole city gets disconnected, you cannot continue using on-chain transaction because you are not capable of pushing them to the Bitcoin network, nor receiving a message that tells you that it has been included in a block. But if you have a whole city running on Lightning Network payments, which is the idea because payments are going to be fast and also for small amounts and also instant and don't need Bitcoin network confirmation. If you have this whole city running on the Lightning Network payments and you have merchants paying each other and people buying things on the stores, even if there is no internet because the gateway doesn't have a connection to the outside world, this mesh network will still be the same as the Lightning Network that is connected to the internet, thanks to these big nodes called ARPIA being linked to the blockchain satellite. So they will still be able to receive the Bitcoin blockchain. So they are capable of seeing the transactions that are happening in the at this moment in the internet and the Bitcoin network. But they are also getting information from the lattice blocks. So they can still provide enough information to the isolated mesh or isolated city, so they can still like continue paying each other. And for this, the Lightning Network full nodes in the future will have watchtowers services, so they will be able to still protect the user inside a mesh that are transacting with each other in the Lightning Network. Because if one of them do have connection to the internet and try to close unilaterally a payment channel, the RPAs that are connecting to the Blockstream satellite will be able to tell if they are trying to scam users inside the mesh.
Gotcha. So that's a nice little protection there. Now, here, okay, and maybe you said this and I just kind of missed it. I get that you can use the Blockstream satellite to receive the data, but if you don't have, you know, if that ARPIA doesn't have another internet connection, then you can't broadcast, correct? If I mean, on the main chain.
If the RPAs are not connected to the internet, they won't be able to broadcast the the protection transaction, the transaction that protects the user from getting the channel closed by one of the sites unilaterally, right? But for that, even if the RPA is not offering the internet connection to the mesh, it could still be connected to the internet because the RPAs are far from, that could be far from the meshes, but they may be able to be connected to the internet somehow. For example, transmitting a small packets like this transaction, this protection transaction that need to be pushed to the Bitcoin network. This is something that is not currently available in the satellite API by Blockstream, which is not only like sending information to the ground, but also receiving it. So this is something that maybe in the future they may open, that it's RPA device will not be only able to receive information from the satellite, but also send information to the satellite, which in this case will let us push this protection transaction. But at the current state, as the satellite API is currently available only through another API that needs internet. So for that, the ARPIA nodes and also other nodes that could be called like exit nodes to the internet can provide the service of protection as the watchtowers currently work for a fee. So if you are a watchtower and you are protecting the user inside a mesh, you have the incentive to protect him because you are going to get paid for protecting him. So if you have a transaction between two and one of the sites decides to steal like $50 from the other, you have an incentive as a watchtower runner and as a RPA node connected to the internet through, I don't know, 3G mobile USB stick, for example. You have the incentive to protect this user so you can get a payment for protecting him from being scammed.
We'll be back with more Bottom Shelf Bitcoin in a minute. But first, let me tell you about the sponsors of this show.
If you've been listening to the show recently, you'll know I launched BitcoinMeritBadge.com, an online store where you can buy Velcro-backed patches to celebrate accomplishments and culture in Bitcoin. It's a great way to support my work and show off your love for Bitcoin at the same time. But what you might not know is that my manufacturer, Patcheon, is also a Bitcoin-friendly business. Patcheon has been accepting Bitcoin since 2011 and accepts on-chain and Lightning Network Bitcoin, as well as a handful of other cryptocurrency payments. Patcheon will work with you to build custom embroidered patches to fit your need, including various backings like adhesive and Velcro. There's no minimum order, so whether you want a big patch or a small patch, one or a thousand, Patcheon is your stop for custom embroidered patches. Check them out today at patcheon.uk.
Now let me ask the kind of obvious question, I guess, here. Why not use just something like, there's Gotenna, which already exists and has similar functions, right? You can already, if you have Samurai Wallet on an Android device, you can push that through Bluetooth to a Gotenna and they have a, a passable mesh networking system there. Why would you not use something like that already exists?
Well, the idea of not using GoTenna comes from the GoTenna's devices are closed source. In the software, they make up API public, but there's no way for you to use it like open source. And also their hardware is very close too. The thing is that the idea comes from providing an alternative to communications in Venezuela and importing a device like the GoTenna to Venezuela is very difficult and expensive. For example, right now, if I try to, I try myself to buy a few GoTenna so we can develop with it because we are thinking about making it compatible. Our devices are affordable and also do it yourself. You can actually make them yourself and just install the software on top of it. And we are going to make it compatible with the GoTenna messages. So the GoTenna messages right now, for example, has a limitation of 3 hops. So if you send a message right now, your message don't reach their destination in the next 3 hops, it's not going to ever reach the receiver. This is a protection, but it's also a limitation, which that doesn't apply to situations like Venezuela. So you actually need it to be different on that side and use other kind of protection for that. But for example, I myself tried to buy some GoTennas. I got a discount on the Black Friday. And at the end, when I finally, after 1.5 months of retention or ransom from the customs in Spain, I finally got the devices in my house for almost how much is that in dollars? It's like almost $100 each. So we are thinking about making devices which use open hardware that could possibly lower the price half. So you can still get like $35 devices in a store and install the software on it, and you are already a node in the mesh. And most of these devices are easier to import, are smaller too. You don't have to buy them specifically from someone. There is also the possibility of the devices already being existent in your country, because what we are working on are basically routers. So if you have a router that is capable of running OpenWRT, you already have a device that is capable of running the mesh network device, the mesh network software, and you can already install the software on it that will let you be a node of the mesh network. So in that, the cost to join the network has been nearly zero for you. So we are also making our own devices and doing our own research on that for due to the limitations the GoTenna have. Also because these affordable do-it-yourself devices are hackable. So you can basically put a bigger antenna on them. You can increase their battery life. You can do whatever you want with it because it's basically a router. So you can literally get the router that you have currently in your house and flash it, and it's going to be turned into a mesh network device. But it's also because in Venezuela, for example, there are a lot of old ASIC miners which are not profitable to be run elsewhere except there, because the electricity cost is near zero. So you have electricity costs, so you can run very old miners that are not profitable anywhere else except there. And all, like many of these devices are currently controlled by a chip, which is basically a router. So you already have several thousands hundreds of thousands of these devices in the country, which all of them already have the piece of hardware that we are suggesting to use for as the lowest end node for the mesh network. So it's like we have the possibility of bootstrapping a network of devices in the case of Venezuela. And the as mentioned, it's open source, open hardware. So this is the reason we are not using the mesh devices from Gotenna, despite we are going to make it compatible with it, and we are going to make it also compatible with transaction Tena and software, and we are closely working with them also in other things that we can work together. It's not a direct competitor. It's just the affordable cheap device that most people elsewhere, where they are not capable of importing devices easily, are going to be using most probably.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I kind of figured that was your rationale, but it's always good to hear it directly from the person. So let me ask you this. I know you said you guys are working on developing it. What is this project? You've talked a lot about open source. Is there a repository that other people can jump on and help you guys out with the development of it, or you know, where would people look to try and help you guys out?
We are currently doing the research, code, hardware test in a Telegram group, which is open. It's public. You can join there. But most of the work is being done in a GitLab private repository, just because they are iterating a lot on top of it, and some things could go wrong. Like yesterday, someone posted his own password in one of the push they did to the repository. So this is the reason we are doing it privately, because they are doing it in their spare time only. It's like 100% of the spare time they have, they are spending it on doing this coding. So, but we are getting some support to do this full time. The thing is that the developers have their own lives. So, and leaving your full-time job, which is something that you kind of have like set your salary every month for this type of open source, open hardware and project, is something very difficult to do if you don't secure enough funding for them to actually drop out from their daily work, daily jobs. So, and that this is the only thing that it's currently slowing us down, but the community is seems to be open to donate to the project to put full time on it if we are capable in the next month to show them results of the things that we have been able to do in our spare time only.
Okay, so if somebody wanted to donate and help support these developers, how would they go about doing that?
We are currently running a Bitcoin donations campaign on Twitter, which is a plain Bitcoin Segway address where you can send funds to. And if you donate $1,000 worth of Bitcoin, you are entitled to get 3 devices of Turpial, which is the smallest one. And it's capable, you will be able to run your own mesh network in your living room with it, with all 3. But we're open to any amount of donations in any cryptocurrency, even if it's not Bitcoin directly. But indeed, we have received some donations already, and some people are committed to donate more when we show them the work we've been doing this past month.
Cool. So yeah, guys, help these devs out. And then, like you said, they're open to other cryptocurrencies. So if you've got other bags you've been trying to offload, just think about offloading them charitably. Well, Is there anything else you wanted to talk about on the mesh? Because if otherwise, I was going to see if maybe you could give us an update on the the other project, the Bitcoin Venezuela project that we kind of talked about last time.
Yeah, the only thing that I'm also working on is basically on the humanitarian aid project, which have been running for the last 3 years. You want to talk about it? Because I don't remember if we mentioned that already in the other project, in the other record.
Yeah, I think we talked about it a little bit. I didn't know if there'd been any new developments or anything different that you guys were able to do. I don't know, it's been probably 6-7 months since we last talked about that.
Yeah, regarding the humanitarian aid project that we call Bitcoin for Venezuela initiative, it's been running now for more than 3 years, and currently we are getting donations through the Lightning Network using the service from OpenNode. But as we are right now developing the mesh network devices, we will be able to run our own full node and also Lightning Network node. So probably in the near future, we'll be able to receive Lightning Network transactions directly to us and not through some central service. That is really cool to have it, but it's also great to test devices on the wild and actually providing this full node services. For the last few months, we've been working a lot on the humanitarian aid, like helping feed people from the 1,600 people daily. And also on the monthly activities, we've been increasing our reach to up to 2,000 people in one day. It's like we go up to some places like hospital, orphanage, and special case centers. We go to a sub kitchen. So it's this monthly activities take a big amount of the donation that we receive, but it translates to help and the happiness of a lot of people. That like the latest activity on the Christmas that we run, which we were able to provide a Christmas lunch to over 1,800 people.
That's awesome. So, yeah. That's always, it's good to hear those things. I mean, it's hard, and we don't want those situations to exist. But at the same time, I think there's so many people who come back and talk about how toxic the Bitcoin community is and blah, blah, blah. And to see these good things that can come out of it, out of people's generosity, is always good to hear.
Yeah, it's great because the nations continue coming. But we see the support of the people of the community is increasing too. The fact is that Venezuela is currently in hyperinflation, so it's like things are going like more expensive every day. So the donations continue coming, and more people donate to it. But we end up like we used to be able to in September and August to buy 1 month of food for the big sub kitchen that we help. And right now, with the same amount of dollars that we used to buy 1 month of food, we can only buy like 1 week. So it's like this past 3 weeks of January have been really difficult to find the food for the sub kitchen. Indeed, we've been only able to donate 2 weeks of the of January, because things are more expensive. The current situation in Venezuela is affecting a lot the productions of food, and things are getting more expensive day to day. So you something that you buy with a local currency right now, you will need like the double amount of the same cryptocurrency just a couple hours later, because the black market rate is being highly affected by the current situation of the country.
So then with the with it kind of continuing to get more expensive and stuff there, do you see people use, I mean, I know when you're in that kind of situation, it's hard to really put away any kind of savings or anything like that, but do you see any use for like the store of value narrative as far as cryptocurrencies are concerned? Or is it all just like day-to-day, you know, medium of exchange, or is it kind of a little of both, or what do you guys see there?
Well, the current use of cryptocurrencies in the country is not as big as the media says. So not many people knows how to use cryptocurrencies, but there are some people that provide a big number of users services, like the remittances services, people who provide a way to buy and sell the local currency for foreign currencies, and these providers are using cryptocurrencies. They are offering like the abstraction to the people on how to store this, have a store of value, and also a way to for them to save. But what they are doing in the background is they are trading cryptocurrency for local currency and US dollar in some services. So the direct use of people using it is not increasing enough, in my opinion. And it's also because the lack of education, the lack of devices capable of running Bitcoin wallets and cryptocurrency wallets. As mentioned before, there are 11.9 million smartphones. Half of them run older versions than Android 5. So if you try to install any cryptocurrency software wallet in your phone, in an Android phone, which is older than Android 5, you will most probably fail, because most of the Bitcoin wallets, cryptocurrency wallets, are currently being developed for at least Android 5 and above. And this, the reason of this is because coding for older version brings more complexity and difficulty to developers, but also because those older versions of Android are more insecure than the new ones. So the new version of Android is really easy to make a wallet for them. For the older ones, you will need to put more time, and you will expose your users to insecure operating system. So this reduces the number of people capable of running a Bitcoin wallet to less than 6 million people. And from those, they also have iPhones, which basically you end up with 6 million devices max. So you have like 6 million devices max capable of actually being able to use a user control wallet and not a hosted wallet, which could be signed in a browser, in a regular browser, in a phone. So for that, it's that even if you see some adoption in the country, what part of it is real or comes from actual individuals using the cryptocurrency? And using it for what? Because most people are currently using the cryptocurrency as a way to jump to the dollar or to store their value in virtual dollars like Uphold dollars or DAI. Tether is very very common there. It's also the one from Binance, the stable coin from Binance. So it's most people are using it as a bridge to get to the dollar, and then back from the dollar to the local currency to be able to buy locally, because most of the merchants don't accept cryptocurrency directly. Indeed, most of them don't take dollars either. And the reason of this is that you cannot openly use cryptocurrencies and dollars, despite it is supposed to be legal, because you still have to comply with the government regulator and impose exchange rate, which will make you lose money. So most people don't do it for fear, but also don't do it because even if they take, if they accept and do it legally, they will be losing money. They need to use the black market rate, and it's currently not free. You are not free to do it. So we've been working with testing with locals, the airdropping cryptocurrency to them. And the most difficult part is getting them to be able to install a working wallet in their phones.
So what's the reason then that so many people's phones are on an older version of Android? I mean, is it just that the hardware that they're using doesn't support anything newer, or people just don't care enough to update, or what kind of motivates that?
Well, the thing is that I think the 11 million of those 11.9 million devices are currently cheap phones. Like, these phones are the ones that are being imported to Venezuela or even produced in China and then imported to Venezuela as Venezuelan devices. And these are like copycats of older brands. So they are white brand and they are sold in the country as new phones. So most of them are like cheap copies of Samsung or other brands, and they are only made to run old versions of Android, which are modified specifically for them. So this is the reason why most of the phones in the country run on old version, because they are really old, or because they are the cheap ones, the ones that are copies. And why people are buying these devices, which basically are old and not capable of running anything with various amount space, like memory space. This is because this is one of the most insecure countries in the world. So you can tell that people basically spend only like max $50 in a phone. That's the max that they will spend on it. Because you most probably will end up with it robbed right after you go outside your house. And you can even get killed if you have a knife on there. So the thing is that this is the reason why there are no new phones there. Indeed, there was someone sad, but this person was joking a few minutes ago about she helping someone who was fighting the forces in one of the current demonstrations in Venezuela. She was helping someone get cover inside their house, and she was joking because this person was the same who this morning robbed me my phone, like stole my phone from me this morning, and I was protecting him from the forces. So this is like very common in the country. It's like, if you have a phone, it's not going to last you more than 1 month or two. So you don't spend much on it, and you are also capable of updating it in less than 2 months by buying a new one for the same price, like $50 max.
Okay. So it's kind of a complicated situation, but that makes more sense now when you explain it like that. Yeah. Doesn't seem like an easy issue to solve then. So you probably have the right idea of seeing if there are ways to come up with something that would be compatible with older versions.
And not only that, the thing that we are trying to develop is deployed in Venezuela is going to be compatible with older version of devices, is that it's going to be compatible with anything, because it is a hardware itself. You don't need a specific phone with a specific software running to be able to transmit messages and Bitcoin transaction and any other cryptocurrency transaction that can be built on top of it or just transmitted through this message system. So the thing is that as you'll be able to carry around these small devices and you'll be connected to the mesh network, you will be able to use anything that is capable of sending a text to the hardware device itself. And you can even plug a keyboard to it and start typing, and it will literally send a text through the device itself to others. So trying to update all the devices in the country is not feasible, because even if you make cheap phones, you will end up with a difficulty of importing them or selling them, and you won't be fixing the insecurity in the country, how much time someone will be able to have this specific device that you have built for cryptocurrency specifically, even if you make like a secure enclosure inside of it. So it gets stolen from by someone and you end up without funds. So the thing is that doing something that it's separated from the whatever phone you have, and that will let you to send anything through it, not only Bitcoin, but anything that you could put in a package, is the thing that we think is needed, not to try to like make the thing upside down in one day or two, but for the future, if you see what is happening in all the countries with the freedom of speech or how communications are being intercepted by countries because they want to, or how Zimbabwe right now has shut down the entire internet for 3 days, or Venezuela is blocking websites that are talking about the demonstrations or that are showing support to the opposition leaders. So all the things that are happening against people's freedom to transact and communicate and show that some people need to work in making tools that are a strength or that are good enough to compete between the government's ability to censor communications and payments.
Yeah, very cool. Make it to where they can't stop it. Okay. Anything else you wanted to talk about before we go?
Currently, I can't come up with anything else right now, unless you ask about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I mean, I think that's good. I think we've kind of covered the necessity for the mesh networks and kind of an overview of how they work, and then kind of why you guys are developing it on your own and the needs that you have there. So, Randy, how can people keep up with you and keep up with the Locha project?
Yeah. Currently, you can follow the development of the mesh network devices on Twitter at Locha_IO and BitcoinVenezuela.com, or the Twitter, which is at BTCVing. There we are going to publish the updates on what we are working on, what we have accomplished, but also you can donate there, and you can also follow what we have been sharing, which is basically proof what we are working on and the test that we're going to make to prove the distances that we think are going to be capable of these devices. And we are currently also working on the blockchain satellite link. So if you have anything that could help us improve the test that we are going to do, that will be really appreciated.
And you'll get me that link for that Telegram group as well, and I'll put that in the show notes so people can come check out what you guys are working on there. So awesome. Randy, thanks for your time. It's been a lot of fun, and can't wait to see what you guys come up with.
Thanks a lot for staying in contact, and also for being interested in what we are doing. We thank you for sharing all this.
Absolutely. All right. Take care.
Thank you, Josh. Have a great day.
Okay, so that's my interview with Randy Brito, and I hope you guys enjoyed that. Go check out the Locha Project. I'm not sure if it really came across exactly in the interview, but basically the point of all of this is that when you sometimes get a situation where either the government cracks down and turns off the internet, or you have ISPs who decide that they want to censor you and they want to cut off your connection or whatever, basically you've created another system of these devices that talk to each other over radio frequencies. So that's kind of the point, is that communications and Bitcoin transactions can go back and forth across these radio frequencies that don't require standard internet connections. So you guys go check out that Locha Project, and I will put links in the show notes to their Twitter feed as well as the Telegram channel, so you can check out and keep up with the development that's going on there. And always the best thing you can do for the show is listen and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode, and then share it. And, you know, it's nice also to get good ratings on iTunes. That helps out and helps other people find the show easily. As always, if you'd like to donate financially to the show, you can go to bottomshelfbitcoin.com/donate, and there will be links there to my Tallycoin page, as well as a reference link for the Tuttle Twins books. You can also get that at bottomshelfbitcoin.com/kidsbook, and that will let you buy the Tuttle Twins books. Remember, those are books about liberty and free market economics at a very approachable level, either for kids or adults, honestly. And they're great. Doesn't cost you anything extra. You know, the price is the same, but I get a little cut of it when you go through my reference link, so that's really nice. I was finally able to get on Lightning. I used Pierre Rochard's launcher, and it spins up a Bitcoin node and then an LND instance, and then he also has guides on there to connect it to Jack Mallers Zap Wallet and Willow Burns Jewel extension for Chrome or Brave, whichever you use, that lets you buy things. So you know, the longest part of all that is just syncing the blockchain, and if you already have a partially synced chain from another node, or if you're already running a node, it will reach out and find that on your computer, which is really slick. So, yeah, once, you know, besides the blockchain syncing part, which is always the longest part of any node operations, the whole thing is really fast. I would guess if you already had a synced node, you could probably go from zero to Blockstream stickers within an hour and a half, would be my guess. If that, it could probably go faster than that. I had a couple of things that I had to do to kind of move things around, so my experience was not totally, and I had other life events that I had to walk away from the computer and go do and then come back. So yeah, but very fast, very slick. Y'all go check that out. And in the process of doing that, I put Windows on my computer. So that's part of why this episode is late getting out, is that I've been having issues with recording, because I don't know, for whatever reason, the recording sounds different, and I've had to re-record this part again. All that aside, you guys can keep up with the show and what's going on. Remember, on Twitter, at BottomShelfBTC, feel free to DM me with your questions or suggestions for the show. And other than that, I will see you guys next time. From Bottom Shelf Bitcoin, I'm Josh Humphrey. Thanks for listening.